There's something special about Luke's gospel, because Luke, of all the gospel writers, loves to surprise us with the understanding of Jesus's, I love this, upside down kingdom. I bought a book by David Pitchett called Upside Down, and it's a brilliant book. In a culture in which religious rulers held positions of influence and power, Jesus spoke a different message, a new message, with a different kind of authority. And he didn't shrink from humiliating the religious experts. He lifted up as examples the people who they disdained, women, children, Gentiles, Samaritans, tax collectors, and the unclean. The other thing is, we also need to remember that today's reading is the last instance of Jesus appearing in the synagogue. The places of regular gatherings were closing rapidly to the Lord's teaching as the opposition of the Pharisees grew and grew. The authorities were watching his every action and waiting to pounce upon him. If you think about this, this is a horrible existence, isn't it? With somebody waiting to pounce on you all the time. Same as the birds, when you watch the birds feeding, they're always like this, aren't they? In case something pounces on them. I don't think we really realise how difficult it was for Jesus. And when we find ourselves in a difficult position, maybe we can remember that. I'd like us to imagine this morning that we're on the edge of that crowd that's followed Jesus so far. And probably in that position, you haven't heard everything and haven't understood everything that you've heard, but you think you've got the general drift of it all and find it both compelling and alarming. If you go with Jesus to the synagogue on this Sabbath day, what do you see? And what sense does it make to you? And picture the scene if you can. Jesus is teaching in the synagogue. A routine occasion, no doubt, for most of those present, even if this rabbi is somewhat unconventional in his teaching. Somewhere near the back is a crippled woman, a familiar presence in the community and rather uncomfortable to have around, especially as people suspect her disability is caused by Satan. In a village where everyone's life was public, people would know who she was and how long she'd been like this. Luke says that she had a spirit of weakness, which probably means that nobody could explain medically why she had become bent and double. Some today think her disability had psychological causes. Some people probably thought so then as well, though they might have said it differently. Maybe somebody had persistently abused her, verbally or physically, when she was younger, and her twisted up emotions communicated themselves to her body, and she found she couldn't get straight. Even after all the medical advances, I have to be careful here because we have a doctor over there. Even after all the medical advances of the last few hundred years, I think we're very much aware that such things happen that she's got without any apparent cause. Yes, thank you. In the synagogue, this is the bit I like in this story. It's one of my favourite ones. In the synagogue, you can see an unspoken power struggle going on. There's the synagogue president in charge of the meeting, but all the eyes are on Jesus. They're not looking at him, which puts both of them in an awkward spot in terms of protocol. Then Jesus does something which shatters the comfortable predictability of synagogue worship. He beckons to this doomed woman to come to the front. And slowly and painfully, she makes her way forward. Now, if you were in the synagogue at that moment, you would have been absolutely, utterly shocked, because women were separated from men, usually behind a screen. And to summon a woman into the men's part of the building, right up to the teaching platform, was absolutely unthinkable. Probably no woman had ever stood there before. In front of everybody on the Sabbath, in the men's part of the synagogue, Jesus touches her and she stands up straight. There's a loud burst of murmuring. Surely this sort of thing shouldn't be going on in God's house. Outside, possibly, but not in here. And then things go from bad to worse for the president of the synagogue, because the woman begins to praise God. A woman daring to open her mouth in the synagogue during worship. Absolutely unthinkable. And we have to look carefully at this story, because it was Jesus who took the initiative on the Sabbath. No doubt it would have been simple to have found this lady the next day and to have her healed then, but he chose to do it on the Sabbath. He was quite deliberately breaking rules and conventions right, left and centre. And it was in order to teach what God really wants. In this case, he goes out of his way to pick his subject. And there's no indication in the reading that she'd asked for healing. A word, a touch, and the woman's healed. Jesus healed this woman who hadn't been able to straighten her body for 18 years. Now, the synagogue president, thoroughly upstaged, lets his anger take refuge in an official public rebuke. A lively encounter between Jesus and the president follows, and Jesus pulls no punches. He says, "You bunch of hypocrites." His healing is a visual aid to his sermon and is carefully chosen to make the following points. Not least, he was saying that healing was one of the activities which were indeed what God wanted to happen on the Sabbath in worship. He was refuting the ruling that since healing was work, it shouldn't be done on the Sabbath. And I don't know whether you noticed this. It's very clever the way Jesus answered his opponents, for he answered them out of their own law. Jesus says, You're quite happy to untie an animal that needs water on the Sabbath. How much more should I untie this woman, Abraham's daughter, and a child of God? Bound by Satan, and what better day than the Sabbath? So Jesus cut through the regulations and theology of what kind of knots could be untied on the Sabbath. Jesus affirmed it was necessary for this woman to be set free. Jesus was saying that this woman had been tied up by Satan, who also has Israel as a whole in his grip. There's another undercurrent in this reading. Suddenly, new light dawns. What Jesus is doing for this poor woman is what he's longing to do for Israel as a whole. Jesus' kingdom message is the one thing that can free her, but Israel's insistence on all these tight boundaries, including the rigid application of the Sabbath laws, is just preventing it happening. Unless the kingdom message heals Israel, there was no hope. Not in this translation, but in another translation, Luke says the woman had a spirit of weakness. That's an interesting sentence. It doesn't say she had a demon or that Jesus threw out a demon, but that she had a spirit of weakness. A Hebrew word used saying that she was spiritually weak. Now, to understand that, we've got to ask ourselves what it means to be spiritually strong. What do the spiritually strong have that the spiritually weak don't have? And can we identify anything that applies to each one of us? The spiritually strong have, number one, a deep trust in God. That's faith. Two, a strong sense of purpose in life. That's hope. Three, a self-forgetting love for God, for people and for God's creation. That's love. And four, without these, one is spiritually weak and actually a sitting target for the enemy. Obviously lacking these, the enemy had tied her in knots and held her in bondage. The use of the word bondage also may be puzzling, and to work out what that means, here's a rough guide to help us see if there's anything that we personally can identify with. A physical handicap can develop into a bondage through self-pity and resentment. Relationships with the living or the dead can develop into a bondage through resentment or possessive love. Pleasures can develop into bondage through being enjoyed in selfish isolation or escapism. Religion can develop into bondage through authoritarianism or through abuse of fear. Interest in the supernatural and the occult can develop into bondage if we depend on such things for guidance or for good luck, and there are many others. Jesus read from Isaiah in the synagogue at Nazareth how the Spirit of the Lord had anointed him to proclaim freedom and release for the captives. Maybe we can begin now to understand how the Sabbath and the church are the time and place for freeing those who are bound and want to be healed. This is part of a bigger picture too. The miracle is more than the healing of a crippled woman. In one sense, we are right to join the crowd in taking pleasure at the discomfort of the Pharisees while applying to ourselves the words of restoration which Jesus held to the people that they'd oppressed. Nevertheless, I think this is a warning. Some of those same sins that beset the Pharisees have become vices in the church today. Presumption, pride, and distancing ourselves from the unclean of the generation. The Pharisees are not always them out there, sometimes they're us. And Jesus's criticism was for the Jews who rejected him while relying on their religious heritage. We, who are the Gentiles, need to remember with gratitude how privileged we are to enjoy the blessings that were once reserved for Jews but now extended to us. Discipleship can be unsettling as it forces us to look afresh at aspects of our culture and religious heritage with which we have grown comfortable. This is more or less the end of the talk. I'll just say that sentence again. Discipleship can be unsettling as it forces us to look afresh at aspects of our culture and religious heritage with which we have grown comfortable. Now, I know this church is a place where people can find release and healing. So just let's end with a prayer.